Today's episode of Motherfucklore is brought to you by the show's sponsors and Patreon. Patreon supporters, such as Sarah Hart and Peter Devlin, helped make today's show possible, and they get access to a range of additional benefits, bonus episodes, and much more. You can support us at patreon.com/Derek. And now, the show. From the Heads of Podcast Network, welcome to Motherfucklore, a podcast about words.
Irish
words.
And words from Ireland. I am Derek O'Shea.
I'm Geraldine McAvoy.
And I'm Padraig O'Kevonik. There was an extended period of calling each other's bluff there to see who would be second.
You'd think that after living in Finland for as long as I am, I'd be comfortable with silences, but no, I'm still not able for it.
Listen, long L pauses between saying things are apparently all the rage now ever since the normal people were doing the thing early on this year.
Oh, but there was loads of mumbling and huffing and fretting in that, so it wasn't not, really a pause in the silence.
That's not all there was.
Oh. There's a fear. There's
a fierce amount of fumbling as well as mumbling.
The new Biddy and Miley is what they were.
I get a sense of so it's on the like RTE player version here, and like loads of people have contacted me and been like, "Hey, have you watched this?" And I get a little bit of pride, and then also an intense need to tell people about Joe Duffy when they ask me, "Have I seen it?" and that they liked it. And I'm like, "Yeah, but come here and I'll tell you about Joe Duffy."
Imagine first of all having to explain what Joe Duffy is to people. It's like,
yeah,
it's like imagine a parochial notice board. Except it's by phone and it's on national radio and everyone tweets about it.
And it's wildly popular.
And the host just winds people up who are really not suited to being wound up at all.
Sure. Derek, you were watching Normal People and you're livid. You said there was too many bums in it.
It's a disgrace, Joe. I saw a Mickey.
It's like what you'd see in a porn, Joe. What would you see in a porn, Mary? Greatest piece of radio there's ever been.
Well, one of the side effects of Normal People was that GAA shorts became very popular, as well as little chains for fellas. But now, a couple of months later, or years later in 2020, as it feels, another item of traditional Irish wear has become fashionable. And it's all down to a popular musician called Taylor Swift. Garagine, you know more about her than us two alphas.
Yes, I do. And just warning at the outset for anybody who's going to criticise me for liking Taylor Swift, I don't care. Get out. I don't care. I don't want to hear it. Okay, I'm a proud Swiftie since I was like 15 years old. And I adore her new album. So she dropped an album today when we're recording called Folklore. And many of the promo shots feature her wearing a very comfy looking jumper, and it's an Aran jumper. She also has a song on it called Cardigan and wears a very nice like Aran style cardigan in some of the other promo shots, and I'm very into it. It looks very cozy. Taylor looks very, very warm.
She does, doesn't she? I mean, like, yeah. it's warm, like Tasha on a verif or fad. It's very mm-hmm. sultry at the moment, the weather. I was looking at it thinking, the poor girl must be sweating.
Well, yeah, but you see, if it's made of wool, it's breathable, so it'll be fine. Should be grand, you know?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, it's nice natural material, it should be fine.
Absolutely, wool breathes, especially if you're wearing it with a nice pair of GA shorts. You master your temperature control.
I was willing to gloss over it once, but like there's enough of a debate as to whether or not Aran jumpers are really traditional enough. GA shorts certainly are not. They are not. They're not part of our national costume.
Excuse me. I didn't think that this would be the hill that I was going to die on, but here I am, planting my flag. How fucking dare you?
I shed blood for these Timahoe Gaelic Football Club shorts. I'll have you know.
Oh my God. Okay, I will have you know. Excuse me. Timahoe, until about the year 2003, maybe, didn't have a crest. and there was a competition in Timahoe National School to design a crest, and yours truly won that competition. So on all of the GAA shorts and Timahoe GAA, I designed that crest, and I didn't get any copywriting for it. I got like a 50 euro voucher, or 50 euro, it was euros at the time, voucher for like a local sports shop, and that was it. I should have trademarked it or something.
Jesus, I've just had a look at Timahoe GAA's Facebook page, and it looks like they're actually using your hand-drawn version.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's
with the harp and the round tower.
The harp and the round tower and the Gaelic script and Tig Machua.
Yeah, Shin Misha. Yeah, I did all of that. There you are now.
God, you're world famous. The 1,000.
Whoever runs my Wikipedia page, please put that on it.
That's a phenomenal achievement. God, I'm very impressed.
That's my legacy.
Yeah. And you are one of my three Facebook friends who follow Timahoe GAA Club, so there you are.
I need to know who you are, though. Sorry, you can tell me later.
I'll tell you later. It's all glamorous people, you know.
So it's fair to say, though, when Taylor appeared on the internet wearing this jumper, it broke Irish Twitter.
Yeah, she broke the internet.
Yeah,
she did. Like Connell's chain, or Connell's Mickey. Broke the internet.
I can't control myself.
His Ballyhanna sausage.
Jesus Christ.
Anyway, yes, it's the reaction, and one of the most common jokes, and the other way is a lot of kind of fellows, you know, maybe 30, over 30, who kind of who think of a joke that's already been made 10 times, and then they say, well, this joke needs to be made an 11th time.
Oh, I'm feeling very seen here.
I wish to be Mr. 11. And if I can't be Mr. 11, I'll be the 12th.
What joke? Yeah, but they're still funny. Are you referring to then, Dad?
And the joke was okay. And I'm not. I know there is other people making jokes about kind of some of her co-contributors on the National and John Bon Iver and all these other lads who kind of worked with her in the music. But the other joke was made that she appeared not unlike one of the Clancy brothers. The Clancy sister.
The slightly more successful Clancy sister.
Not that I subscribe to the binary, but yeah.
She's the Andrea to the other ones.
Oh, let's not bring the cores into this, because the Clancy brothers were cool. The Clancy brothers were shit cool. They were
bigger than the Beatles.
They were massive. Like they were. I think we tend to. We have this weird association and sort of opinion of our own cultural heritage. Like, have you ever heard people refer to trad music as diddly eye music?
Yeah.
It drives me mental. I know why they're saying it, because it encapsulates the rhythm and sort of says it. But like, anybody who says that kind of says, they're saying that it's a bit twee and a bit embarrassing and not what we want to be associated with. And that kind of, that affected the fame of the Clancy brothers here in Ireland. They were massive internationally. They were the biggest boy band in the world before the Beatles.
I think that feeds into something, though, that's a little bit about Irish culture anyway, is that we're inherently like weird about things that like represent us, like trad music, or like maybe Irish dancers might be seen as like twee girls with like, you know, curly hair and not to be taken seriously. And then when somebody you know, makes it cool, so and it becomes big on like an international stage, then we're like, oh, okay, that's fine. But can you imagine if like we were talking about normal people, if that was just like a small RT budget production, like I feel people would have been really, really like not into it. But the fact that it became so popular internationally, people were like, hey, this is actually pretty cool. But we're kind of weird about like taking ownership over our own cultural iconography and stuff.
This is extremely true. And you do under comments on articles about Derry Girls, normal people and Father Ted, people say, oh, you know, RT would have passed over in this, and they had to get it made abroad. But like, it wouldn't have been accepted if it was made by RT. In fact, I remember when Once came out, the movie, the Glenn Anzard or Kit Urkel movie came out, it initially was just released in Ireland, and it was very poorly received critically, kind of sniffed at. And then when Steven Spielberg said he liked it and it did well in one of the American film festivals, suddenly people forgot about the review they wrote 4 months ago.
They forgot about the reader. Said, is that your man Outspan from The Commitments? Mm-hmm. Your man out of the frames has done a movie.
Indeed.
Like the Clancy brothers, though, like nobody talks about them. I find it so sad and so upsetting, because without the Clancy brothers, there's definitely no Bob Dylan. There's probably no Pete Seeger, like, you know, and Peggy Seeger, of course, even Ewan McCall, and then Christy Moore, the Dubliners, like, everyone sort of owes some kind of aspect of their musical heritage to the Clancy brothers and Tommy Makem, the originals. Yes. They were unreal.
And prior to the arrival of the Clancy brothers in New York, Irish music was not really well understood. In fact, Byron's going to put in a small clip of a piece of music called the Diddly Eye Irish Mambo, which you're all going to enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mambo number 5.
What do you think they're dancing to everywhere? Sure, it's a mambo beat with an Irish air. Sure, and it just came over from over there. It's the diddly eye Irish mambo. Look at the sweet Colleen with her gay gossoon, doing a mambo step to an Irish tune. Didn't they win a prize at the harvest moon with the diddly eye Irish mambo?
We're back from that interesting piece of music. Wasn't that awful?
Interesting is a hell of a word.
I really enjoyed it. Yes, it was a wonderful interlude.
It was terrible. But because the Clancy brothers and Tommy Makem were actually introduced by researchers working for the Smithsonian who were looking at Irish culture, Irish songs that might be lost, given the massive emigration and other issues facing rural Ireland. And Tommy Makem obviously was from Armagh, and the Clancy brothers were from the Greater Tipperary area. And
Tipperary-Waterford border, Carrick and
Shore. Tipperary-Waterford border.
Yeah. And they all went up, they all emigrated for various different reasons. None of them emigrated to make their fortune in show business, strangely enough. The older two of the Clancy brothers, Paddy and Tom, had both served in the Royal Air Force, the British Royal Air Force, in World War II, fighting the Nazis, and they emigrated to Canada. They went over, and this is a brilliant story, they went over on a ship with 400 war brides, 400 women who had married American and Canadian soldiers and sailors during the war and were later being shipped over to meet them. The only men on board were Paddy, Tom, a friend of theirs called Pa Casey, and the ship sailors. They said it was the best journey they've ever had in their entire lives. What happened was they started a production company. They wanted to make stage shows and movies. And some of these stage shows, the Clancy brothers were in, because they were really successful on and off Broadway. Some of them included Irish songs, the traditional Irish songs that they would have heard growing up. And it turns out that all four Clancy brothers had really, really good voices. Like there was Paddy and Tom were over first, and then Bobby went over, and then Bobby went back to Carrick and Shore to take over the family insurance business, and Liam, the youngest brother, emigrated and went over. And then you're right, they were introduced to Tommy Makem by researchers at the Smithsonian Institute, because Tommy Makem's mother was one of the traditional singers that they had recorded songs that nobody else had versions of. And so they started gigging together. And like, I think one of my favorite things is they couldn't think of a name for the group. One of them wanted to call it the Beggar Men. Another one wanted to call them the Tinkers. Another one wanted to call them the Chieftains, and they couldn't think of it. And eventually they were playing in this pub one evening, and the manager of the pub just said, you know, feck it, like, I can't wait on you guys to come up with a name. So he put up on the sign outside, playing tonight, the Clancy brothers and Tommy Makem. And the stars were born. It stuck. Like, it was utterly incredible. They ended up being spotted by scouts for what was the biggest TV show at the time, the Ed Sullivan Show. Mm-hmm. And at this stage, their second album was out. They'd done an album of Rebel Songs, and then they did an album of Drinking Songs. And they were on the pub circuit. They were playing all the Irish pubs across the east coast of the United States and as far inland as Chicago. And they ended up being seen by scouts from the Ed Sullivan Show. And just through happenstance, two incredible things happened. First of all, the second band that were due to play the Ed Sullivan Show that night cancelled. So instead of having just two songs, the Clancy brothers had 15 minutes of screen time to something like 60 million people who were watching that night. And of course, it was recorded and you can still watch the appearance on YouTube, and it's absolutely fantastic. And then the other quirky, strange thing that happened was that night they were wearing jumpers that their mother had sent over to keep them warm in the winter, because she had read the previous year that like New York had had terrible snowstorms. So she sent over a bunch of jumpers for the lads that she'd made herself in the Aran pattern. The whether or not it's traditional, we can discuss, but you know, there were Aran jumpers anyway, and they wore them at a gig one evening to keep warm. And their manager, Marty Ehrenreich, the same guy who discovered Barbara Streisand, he was managing them at the time, and he just said, "That's it. That's the look I've been looking for. Aran jumpers. That's it. That's perfect, boys. Wear those." So they wore those Aran jumpers on the Ed Sullivan Show, and 60 million people or so in America saw it, and then hundreds of millions around the world saw it, and the sale of Aran jumpers rocketed 700%, and they saved the entire Aran knitwear industry. Singing tunes and drinking pints on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Isn't it something? And it's because having that kind of coordinated look, and so often these things do happen by accident, kind of that people like the kind of the Hugh Grant haircut, the in Four Weddings and a Funeral, the Rachel haircut and Friends, the other kind of the Clancy Brothers jumpers, and so often people, and ABBA's costumes as well, often they happened either by accident or for tax reasons, but the Clancy Brothers just happened to have a mother who was an accomplished knitter. But we have an accomplished knitter on the Mother Folklore team.
Yes, you do. And that's why I'm here today, because I wasn't going to let you do an episode about Taylor Swift and knitting without being involved in it. So here I am. So yeah, and I actually knit. So I'm a knitter, but I favour Aran knitting. So if I'm knitting, usually it's like an Aran pattern, because I really like doing it.
So what would be the kind of what would be the characteristics of an Aran pattern compared to maybe some of the other patterns you might find yourself knitting?
Yeah, so Aran is, it's a lot of, so with Aran, usually you will use your two needles, the needles that hold your yarn and your project, and then you have a cable, a third, like small little needle that is like double pointed on each end, and that's a cable needle, and you use that to make the, like, the patterns. So you have these, like, diamonds or cables that they're like braids almost, and ribbing and stuff, and it ends up being really, really thick and really heavy. So in prep for this episode, I was kind of talking to Derek about it, and like, I think there's an assumption that like Aran is really hard to knit, and I get it that it is, like, but for me, I don't think, once you learn how to use a cable needle, so a cable needle is essentially you take like two or four stitches off the work and you put it in front or behind your work, and then you put them back on. So you create this like twist, and then the twist creates a pattern. And once you know how to do that, that's essentially all there is to it. But it's just really, really time intensive. Like, it's just, it takes a really long time. I'm not necessarily a very fast knitter, but like, even for a fast knitter, it would take you, like, one sweater would take you months. Like, and it's so, like, I can't tell you like the weight of it when you're holding it. Like, it's not something you can just like do on the number 46, like, because it's so massive, it's so heavy that you can't just, there comes a point where you're like, okay, I can't carry this around with me anymore, like, because I need to bring a separate bag for my knitting. I remember going on, I kind of got into knitting again in the last 10 years or so when I started doing a lot of traveling, because you can knit on airplanes if you have wooden needles. Pro tip for any knitters out there who aren't sure. But I would bring like a separate bag for my knitting, and like, and there came a point where I was like knitting across other people in the aisle when I was doing like a big Aran sweater, and I was like, okay, you got to stop knitting now. You're actually taking up space in the airplane, and people hate you because you're this weirdo who's got this like massive fucking jumper across her sweater or across her knees, like knitting it. But yeah, I don't know whether it's definitely in the knitting community, it's very popular. So Ravelry is like knitting social media. And there's like whole sections dedicated to Aran sweaters. I'm actually waiting for somebody to put up a pattern for Taylor Swift's jumper, because as I said, it's lovely. But it's definitely associated with Ireland. One of the like stitches that is used in Aran's knitting is called Irish moss stitch. So it kind of looks like moss. Like, there's these little diamonds of like what looks like moss. And that's a pretty common pattern. Some of the pictures of the Clancy brothers, you can see that they have that type of knitting in their sweaters. Yeah, so it's definitely associated, whether or not it's traditional, I don't know, but it's definitely associated now with Ireland. And then when you think of the Aran sweater shops, so you have the Blarney Woolen Mills and you have the shops on the Aran Islands. Inishmore has one. I don't know about the other two islands. And there's one of those shops across from Trinity College on College Green. So anyone familiar with those areas will know those sweater shops. And they have all of those traditional jumpers, usually made from wool as well, which is very expensive to do. I tend to use polyester wool because...
Really?
Yeah, it's really expensive. And then also, if you... Like, wool is really scratchy. Mm. So if you're knitting an entire... I normally don't do, like, adult sweaters because I did one for myself and for... quite a while during it, I was unemployed, so I didn't have Aunt Nest to be doing. And it took me 9 months to build. Essentially, you're building it. Like, it's very, very time intensive.
This is why they say, isn't it, that it's bad luck to knit a jumper for a partner because they can't understand the amount of work that's gone into it and appreciate the gift correctly. And
I've never heard that. I've also never made a jumper for a partner.
Possibly just as well, because I think they say that there's I guess the, you know, when you start knitting the jumper, the relationship's at a different stage than it is at the end of the jumper.
By the time you're finished.
Yeah. And
that might be very true.
Yeah, it's the Hello Magazine effect.
What's the Hello Magazine effect? I don't understand.
Yeah, they say in Hello Magazine I'm not sure if it's true anymore, but back in the 90s, it was a case that when a couple celebrated their relationship by putting a pictorial in Hello Magazine, they would be divorced by the time it came out.
Oh my God, gas. What? The 90s are a crazy time.
Oh, yes.
Now they don't even wait that long. It's just, why wait until it comes out? Just get divorced.
Who buys magazines, though? Do people still buy magazines?
I don't know. Do magazines still exist?
I have no idea.
That being said, actually, I buy knitting magazines all the time. Actually, I'm full of shit.
Yeah. There's
a reason for knitting magazines to exist.
It's funny you mention this because I remember when the RTE Guide used to have knitting patterns every issue that it came out. And then when some of the rival TV magazines came out in Ireland, and really, I mean, there was a time when you didn't really need much of a TV magazine situation in Ireland because there's only a couple of channels and one channel for a while. But like, and the new ones came out, they said, oh, we're cool, we don't have knitting patterns. And then it's like the RTE Guide was almost embarrassed into removing their knitting patterns. And then knitting became cool again.
Oh. Did it? When did it become cool? Because I'm still facing that you missed.
No.
It became cool yesterday when Taylor Swift put on an Aran jumper. Keep up, Garadine.
I think knitting became quite cool around the time. I think I remember when New Girl began, obviously, and New Girl is having a new life on Netflix at the moment. There was this moment that this of the cool nerd, the Zooey Deschanel type was that knitting or crocheting, even. I think maybe it's crocheting that became popular.
Crocheting is quicker. That's definitely become popular. Like, yeah. I envy crochet. I can't crochet and it takes like way less time. So yeah,
what's the difference? Crochet has little hook things, has it?
Yeah, crochet is one hand essentially. Well, yeah, it's just one little hook and then you just speed through it. Whereas knitting is two and then Aran knitting is three. Socks is like, if you're knitting socks, you're using like 5 needles. Like, you're an insane person for knitting socks. Yeah, they do. It's really popular. So knitting is quite actually popular here in Finland. And it's very popular to knit socks. And they knit these like scratchy woolen socks. As I said, I don't use wool because it ends up ripping my fingers to threads. Like, it's just not an enjoyable experience. But if you've got a really cold winter, you need a good woolen sock. And people are super into knitting. And they have these tiny, like, they've got like 6 needles on the go. And I'm just like amazed by them. But crocheting then is just the one hook. And I don't know. I don't understand.
It's a Bureau.
It's on Ravelry as well.
A Bureau crochet is a crochet hook, am I right?
In Irish, I don't know.
On scale, I believe it is.
Yeah. No. Sorry.
It's a needle either way. It's a needle either way, for whether you're crocheting or knit oil.
It's a hook when you're crocheting.
Yeah, but I'm merely saying that the terminology according to O'Donnell is the same whether it's a hook or a needle. That could cause all kinds of mayhem. But he probably
wasn't. That sounds like That sounds like to me. So this is a weird pet peeve that I have. Okay. But like every now and then in like movies and TV, they like to like make somebody appear quirky or boring or like old by them knitting. Mm-hmm. And they have the actor talking about crocheting and they're holding a knitting needle or vice versa. Or worse still, this drives me up the wall. They have people like knitting with an inverted commas, but they're clearly not knitting. And it drives me fucking demented. I don't know why I get so annoyed about it. I'm like, they're just like poking at like a knitted project. And I'm like, you're very clearly not even holding the needles. Like who did this? Who's the continuity expert on this? I want to talk to somebody now.
So you stay back and watch the credits and see who the knitting consultant was.
And write them a very strongly worded letter.
In Titanic, when Leonardo DiCaprio is doing the Irish dancing, you can just see his head. Then you see someone else's feet moving and then you go back to his head. Yeah, not buying it. Not buying it. I need a whole body shot or I'm not believing it. And similarly, oh yeah, all those people playing piano and then suddenly you see their face and they're making all those piano faces, their happy piano face.
Oh, yeah.
And then you see their hands. Someone's but they're completely disconnected. Definitely someone else's hands. You can tell
but
from
they
the
don't
age.
Even bother getting a knitting double for like TV shows, which upsets me. They bother with the piano and stuff. They have to have somebody playing, but they never bother having somebody knitting. So annoying.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't take it as seriously as the Clancy Brothers or Taylor Swift did.
I know.
Those people have shown some real respect to knitwear. I think that's a credit to them. The one thing I do want to add is though, like, it's not really like Aran jumpers are not really that old, and there's a lot of mythology around Aran jumpers, but they were most historians reckon now that they were probably introduced between the 1890s and the turn of the 20th century, when as part of the work in the what was called the Congested Districts Board, which looked after rural Ireland, a lot of fishermen from Guernsey were sort of brought in to take charge of like, or to sort of show their expertise in fishing on the west coast of Ireland. And they would have done a lot of workshops with local people who would have seen their essentially waterproof jumpers and copied them. And there is mythology as well that like every family had a pattern that was unique to them and you could identify a drowned body. Nothing so sinister, really. Nothing so morbid or macabre about the jumpers other than they were just recognized for what they were. Lovely, warm, waterproof jumpers that you could wear out on the boat and you can wear them underneath your oilskins and you're not going to freeze to death. That's the point of them. That's what they're there for. And, you know, the Clancy Brothers, Taylor Swift, they rock a good Aran jumper.
And plain old economics comes into it too, because there was a wool boom globally in the 1950s, and then Ireland just decided to get involved on that, and the Aran sweater became much more popular when wool was becoming more popular, and it became less popular when there was a massive crash in the wool market in 1966. So it's
and that was when the Clancy brothers were beginning to split up. They weren't together with Tommy Mekin by the end of the 60s. So
they fought like brothers.
Surprisingly. You thought the Beatles fought.
Oh man, that's sad, because I think one of the older Clancy brothers wanted to be an actor and wanted to kind of do more of that and was less reliable for touring gigs. Tommy Makem famously told jokes in between his songs. And this is actually how Brendan Grace got started. When Brendan Grace started as a musician, he started telling jokes. People said, your jokes are better than your singing, mate.
Brendan Grace did have a hit with Rings End Rose. He actually was a lovely, lovely singer. He was a fantastic ballad singer. But I think he just recognised that the market was saturated and that his jokes were a little bit better, absolutely, than his singing. So that was his niche and he carved it out. But yeah, absolutely. That was the kind of, like, their influence is unreal. Like, without the Clancy brothers and Tommy Makem, there's no Christy Moore. There's possibly no Dubliners. There's definitely no Bob Dylan. You know what I mean? Like, God knows, even the idea.
And there's no Aran sweater market.
And there's no Aran sweater market. And there's no, and there's no Folklore by Taylor Swift then. And that would be tragic.
And before we wrap up, I mean, Garrison, would you say that Taylor Swift has a special relationship with Ireland or? Not so. I mean, there's...
Well, her last album had a song on it and there was a line in it and I quote, I love the English, so maybe not. Like, I do skip that one. she's going out with an English fella. Like, it's not her fault. God love her. Taylor, she doesn't understand.
Taylor, is that a cry for help? Blink twice if you're okay.
Well, she's comes to Ireland usually on her tours and stuff. But yeah, I don't know if she has a special relationship. Another fun fact, whoever does my Wikipedia page, please update it with this. In 2000, it would have been about 2009, I went to Cluj Lurgan, and that's the guys who do the TV Lurgan. You know, they do all of those cover songs. They're really good ones. So like as a precursor to that, they used to do just like song competitions. They weren't as glamorous and they didn't have all the production. But we would like translate songs into Irish, and everyone's like Banantee house would win a prize then. But my house that year won the competition for translating Taylor Swift's song Love Story into Irish. You're very fucking welcome. And I have a t-shirt that says Is Bralan Gaeilge on it because of that. I work about sometimes.
That's my favourite Tay Tay song. Do you still have the lyrics?
I don't, but it's probably on the internet or on a CD somewhere.
I'll go googling. That's my number one. That's my number one Tay Tay song. Love that.
It's a good one. It is a good one.
Back when she was still a country artist, essentially.
Listen, have you listened to Folklore? There's a harmonica in one of the songs.
I'm going to listen to it tonight.
Fantastic.
She's going back to her roots.
And We could probably do a whole other episode in country music, and we probably will, because it is something that's also maligned in life. But we are going to wrap up now. This is a little bonus episode all for you wonderful Motherfuckler fans out there. We're going to leave you now with the wonderful words of Liam Clancy.
Oh, money that ever I see, I spend it good company, and all the harm that e'er I've done, alas, it was to none but me. And all I've done for want of wit to memory now I can't recall. So filled me a parting glass, good night and joy be with you.
So until the next time, it's a slán from me.
Slán
from me. Slán from me.
Yay! Fuck, fuck it! Bye!
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Motherfucklore. Motherfucklore comes out every Friday. Or sometimes we do spare episodes that come out in the middle of the week on the Headstuff Podcast Network. You can contact Headstuff, who have excellent studio facilities if you want to make your own podcast. The link is in the bio. If you want to contact the show, you can email us at motherfucklore@headstuff.org. Thanks a million to Brian for doing the production work on this episode. Thank you very much to Kristen Scheel, who does our artwork. If you support Motherfucklore on Patreon, you can actually get a discount on Kristen Scheel's prints, as well as bonus episodes and other benefits, including monthly discounts on a range of Irish-related creators' activities. Join us on Friday for another episode.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
We're going to end with... Fuck, hang on, sorry.
Was one of us supposed to sing a song?